of things. I thought Krishna creates all things. As soon as the material object is struck, however, the mind is affected and we suffer. For example, with the material elements, the working senses, the knowledge gathering senses, we create a very nice car. And when the car is accidentally smashed in a collision, the mind suffers. And through the mind, the living entity suffers. Paragraph. The fact is that the living entity, while concocting with the mind, creates the material condition. Because matter is destructible through the material condition, the living entity suffers. Otherwise, the living entity is detached from all material conditions. When one comes to the Brahman platform, the platform of spiritual life, fully understanding that he is a spirit soul, aham brahmasmi, he is no longer affected by lamentation or hankering. Yay! When will we get there? As the Lord says in Bhagavad Gita 18:54, Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma Nasochati Nakankshati. Translation. One who is thus transcendentally situated at once realizes the Supreme Brahman and becomes fully joyful. He never laments nor desires to have anything. Elsewhere in Bhagavad Gita 15:7, the Lord says, Mam evangsa jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatanah manakshastani indriyani prakritistani karshati. Translation. The living entities in this conditioned world are my eternal fragmental parts due to the conditioned life. They're struggling very hard with the six senses, which include the mind. Anyone struggling with their mind? Once upon a time, I remember struggling with the mind. 15 years ago, I remember I was struggling with my mind. It was difficult, but I got over it. The living entity is actually part and parcel of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and is unaffected by material conditions, but because the mind, manaha, is affected, the senses are affected, and the living entity struggles for existence within this material world. Any questions? Aham idehino deho dravya jnana kriyatmakaha dehino vivida klesha santapa krid udharitaha. Translation. The living entity in the bodily concept of life is absorbed in the body, which is a combination of the physical elements, the five senses for gathering knowledge, and the five senses of action, along with the mind. Although through the mind, the living entity suffers three kinds of tribulations, adibhautaka, adidaivaka, and adiatmaka. Therefore, this body is the source of all miseries. And we're attached to the source of our miseries. It's problematic. In the purport, Prabhupada makes reference to the previous verse, so I'll just quickly read that. These visible objects, like wife, children, and property, are like dreams and mental concoctions. Maharaj, you spoke on this verse? No? Who spoke on this verse? Subal. Okay. Actually, What we see has no permanent existence. It is sometimes seen and sometimes not. Only because of our past actions do we create such mental concoctions, and because of these mental concoctions we perform further activities. And then the living entity, so in the bodily conception of life, suffers. Just a little appreciation. When I was in Vrindavan recently, like my whirlwind travels is probably like a week and a half ago. But there was I had a little seminar, just like covering the entire sixth canto. So it's really fresh in my mind. You know, the context is important. The way that the Bhagavat Purana or any of the Puranas work is there's teachings, and the teachings are illuminated and illustrated through histories. So that's what's going on here. There's a history of a king who was obsessively attached. You know, we're attached to stuff. But he was obsessively attached. Some people are also obsessively attached. You know, anyway. there was an arrangement made by Angira to help him become detached. And it worked. But it went in stages. And we should, you know, be a little bit thoughtful about how to help people, practically speaking, become detached. So Angira, when he met this obsessively attached king, he had more wives than Krishna had. I remember discussing this last time I was here. You were covering that section. What was the number? 100,000 wives? 10 million wives? What was the number? Who remembers? 10 million? He had a lot of wives. Too many. And the message was, it's not meant that you're going to have a son, but he was obsessive. I have to have a son. And so he was, you know, boo-hoo. He was lamenting. Oh, I have no son. So rather than Angira could understand, here's a person that if I say it's not meant to happen, he won't hear it. I can't pass on transcendental knowledge to somebody who's too attached. So he had the capacity, and you know, we don't always have a signal how to help somebody who's obsessively attached become unattached, but he had the capacity to make an arrangement so he could have a son who would be the source of happiness and a source of misery, because he then departed. He departed in a very cruel way, but when the king saw that his son had died, he didn't know how it happened, it just his son had died and he was boo-hoo. He was lamenting terribly. And then this is the scene, Angira and Narada Muni, who has this uncanny ability to know exactly when to show up and exactly what to say and help the person become unattached. So Angira and Narada, they were friends. They came at the same time, and now that he's smashed, he's ready to hear transcendental knowledge. And then they imparted transcendental knowledge. And what does that mean, transcendental knowledge? Well, it means many things. It means understanding what is eternal versus what is temporary. That's one very simple way of describing. And that which is temporary and that which is eternal both have the relationship with the Supreme Eternal. That's another transcendental knowledge item. But they didn't go there yet. They were just like getting him to see the distinction between matter and spirit. It's Sankhya, analyzing or distinguishing matter and spirit, and helping the person who's hearing that we belong over here on the spirit category. We don't belong over there on the matter category. Okay, that's nice. We belong to the spirit category and not the matter category, but we're attached to the matter category. And so what happens? Or how, by what's the medium of that attachment? And what happens? That's what is being described right here. You know, your misery, King Chitraketu, is because of attachment to temporary. And attachment is the, you know, the medium is trying to be the enjoyer of the temporary. When you're not meant to be the enjoyer of the temporary. It's not you, and it's not your position of happiness. In fact, it's the position of misery. Krishna teaches this in Bhagavad Gita too. So we could certainly make reference to how he teaches that. Yehi samsparsha ja bhoga. Dukha yonaya evate. And it happens again and again. I've described this a number of times. It's coming to mind now, so I'll say it again. When I was a little boy, jack-in-the-boxes were popular. Lakshmimoni, do you remember jack-in-the-boxes? Yes, Maharaj. So at least the version, you know, like hula hoops and, you know, skateboards and different things are fashionable from time to time. Now it's, you know, video games and stuff. So then it was a jack-in-the-box. And the way that it worked was, there was this like little metal box with a lid. And you'd wind up this little kind of crank it up thing in the back. And then you press something and out comes this on a spring, this like, you know, goblin guy. And, you know, he makes a little sound. And all the kids, you know, see the jack-in-the-box come out of the box, and they laugh. Ooh. And then they push the guy back down, put the lid back down, crank it up, press the button, and he goes, ooh. And you just do it over and over and over and over and over and over. Similarly, material life. Again and again and again and again and again and again. And what's the happiness? That's like, you know, just child's game. But this is, you know, the conditioned soul's game. It's the game of the material energy entrapping the living entity in illusion. There's no happiness in that. And in fact, this verse is, it has two words. Klesha and santapa. Klesha, Prabhupada breaks it down into the three. Adi bhautika, adi atmika, and adi daivika kleshas. Take your pick or combination. And it's always going to be some or all. Guaranteed that, you know, the little jack in the box that comes out is misery. Dukkha yonaya, because the expectation is sukha and you get dukkha. And it happens again and again and again and again. Endlessly. There's different versions. Then, you know, there's the child's version, the young boy's version, the young man's version, the different versions. And it's always the same. Misery. And we keep doing it. Just I'll do it differently and adjust it. You know, in material intelligence, I'll make the dukkha into sukha. Just have to adjust things. The endless series of adjustments that never produce happiness. It always produces misery. Every time. Without fail. By design, it's like that. Krishna designs it like that. wait a minute, he's the supreme powerful and he's very compassionate, so I designed something that brings misery. You know, he made a mistake. Or he's cruel. Or there is no God, or, you know, different ideas that people have. It's because they don't want the lesson, because they don't want the alternative. What's the alternative? Take shelter of Krishna. Find the position of real happiness. That's where this is headed. That's where transcendental knowledge is headed. Because it's not done with just transcendental knowledge. After the transcendental knowledge section, he gets it. And then they give a little more transcendental knowledge, and then Narada specifically gives him bhakti. Transcendental. So there's a relationship between understanding the distinction between the temporary and the eternal. This is a philosophical matter. Transcendental knowledge doesn't stand alone. Transcendental knowledge has a purpose. To the detachment from matter, but it's not complete without attachment to spirit. Prabhupada gives this example. There's hundreds of examples, but one that comes to mind. A worm in stool. So someone's compassionate. Oh, poor worm, let me pull the worm out of the stool. You leave the worm out of the stool. What happens? He looks back at the pile of stool and goes slithering back into the pile of stool. Ooh. That's what happens. So, compassion of trying, even transcendental knowledge compassion kind, is incomplete. It's actually a theme, my dear devotees, of this sixth canto. And this is illustrating a theme. It goes back to the first chapter. And the first chapter, quickly, is a question by Maharaj Parikshit to Shukadeva Goswami. Yikes! Fifth canto, hellish planets. Ooh, so much suffering. What can be done to help the living entity overcome suffering, having performed sinful activities, having turned their back upon Krishna? And when you turn your back upon Krishna, that's darkness. And in darkness, invariably, stupid things are done. You know, sinful activities are performed. Invariably. And with that, then there's suffering and there's a hellish planet. So Maharaj Parikshit wants to know what can be done to prevent people from having to suffer the reactions of their past sins, like those hellish planet places. So, quickly, abstracting, there's Karma Kanda, Gyana Kanda, and Bhagavad Dharma, alternatives. And the Gyana Kanda section, here's transcendental knowledge. Gyana Kanda section is insufficient. It's good. To a degree, it's necessary, because even bhakti has its element of sambandha gyan, understanding, you know, just like Krishna does with Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita, it's just what's happening here. There's knowledge of who we really are and who we aren't, and being attached to who we aren't is the source of misery. Ignorance is the root cause of misery. What's the root cause of suffering? Ignorance. Ignorance of what? Ignorance of truth with a capital T. Ignorance of truth is suffering. Although you're thinking, hey, there's that nice pile of stool. Or whatever your favorite thing is. Depends on what species you are and what mode of nature you're in. But, you know, the object looks like yummy. So you go for it, for in the mood of enjoyment. Bhoga. And the senses contact the sense object. Some sparsha ja. Bhoga, that's all it takes. Dukkha yonaya evate. Pick your mode of nature. Go for it. Dukkha yonaya evate. Every time. Jack in the box. Every time. However many times you do it. However many lifetimes you do it. However many varieties of ways you do it. It's the same thing. Now, built within this verse is a very important additional lesson. Those objects, I'll read the statement by Prabhupada in the purport. The mind is the center because the mind creates all things. What does that mean? The mind creates all things. Well, the lessons about the mind, one of them is in Krishna's Bhagavad Gita, he indicates that the mind carries different conceptions of life, just as air carries aromas. So air is odorless, colorless, tasteless, but then stand downwind of a garbage dump. I was taking Panchakarma treatment in Bombay one time, and over that way was a garbage dump. You know, sanitation in India is like ridiculous. So anyway, and there was this morning breeze coming from the ocean, and I was downwind, and it stunk. And you know, how can people live in downwind from the garbage dump? Phew. But you know, air is odorless, tasteless, colorless, and pure. But then it carries aromas. And as the mind is also pure, it carries something that may be impure. The conception that the mind carries is different than the mind. Like, the aroma that's in the air is different than the air. But we identify with the conceptions of life because, behind that conception that's carried in the mind is this, I want to enjoy. Raga dvesha samutena. I want to enjoy. Man, do I want to enjoy. And unfortunately, in the spirit of independent from Krishna enjoyment. So a desire to enjoy is natural to the soul. That's not like get out a dagger and stab it to death. Become desireless. I was having this discussion with this man after the program in Naperville. What's wrong with desire? Desire seems natural. Yes, desire is natural. It's concomitant with the soul. But that desire that's independent of the happiness of the Supreme, that's the problem. Then came the yeah, but. Yeah, but, I have some needs and, my mother is ill and I desire, whatever the thing is. So what to do? I have this desire. So connect the desire to the Supreme. Ultimately, just desire the happiness of the Supreme and everything is fulfilled, but you're not able to do that because of the material complexity that you're entangled in. So then desire the things that you desire in connection with service to the Supreme, called dovetail. That word dovetail, Prabhupada used, and it's something that's in Bhaktisiddhanta's writing too, since I've been like very happily engaged in Sri Brahma Samhita understanding. The final five verses of Brahma Samhita is a lesson in dovetail. It's a lesson for us that, okay, supposing you're Lord Brahma and you become perfectly realized. That would be nice. Become perfectly realized. What about material desire? Should be that when you're perfectly realized, material desire vanishes, right? Well, not in Lord Brahma's case, and depends on our situation too. He had this, I want to create a universe desire. That's a material desire, by the way. However, he wanted to do it for the Supreme. So that was nice. So he was worried. He was concerned. We should be concerned about how do we, this balance thing to people. How do you balance material and spiritual? Well, you don't balance it. You do everything for Krishna. That's how you do it. So those lessons are there. And then Bhaktisiddhanta in his very special language describes different categories of tendencies for living entities to be involved in matter. They have their social, They have their civic. They have their own body and mind. Things like here. You know, he wants to have a son or be a king or whatever, you know, whatever it is that we have. So that's the material. And then there's, you know, is that, there's two questions. If I neglect the material, will I be irresponsible? Yes. And the other is, if I just do the spiritual, if I just do the material, then it's going to interfere with my spiritual dilemma, false dilemma, according to Bhaktisiddhanta and the teachings of Lord Brahma, of Lord Krishna to Lord Brahma. In this case, it's not Lord Vishnu, it's Lord Brahma. You know, the same one that played the flute that gave him the, you know, Kam Gayatri. Krishna speaks to him. Govinda, the one that he's just like, Govinda Madhi Purusham, that one. He speaks to him. This, you know, Krishna in Goloka Vrindavan, distinct from, you know, the same Krishna, the expansion of Krishna, that speaks Bhagavad Gita. Anyway, it's a subtle point. But Krishna instructs Brahma, don't worry, my darling, he calls him, because he's a maidservant. My darling, please understand, here's the method for you. Where with mind fixed upon me, those worldly activities joined with the mind fixed upon me, they're as liberating as the direct activities of bhakti. There's the solution. And that's nice. The problem with the solution is its application. Because we're attached. And the instrument of attachment is the mind. Because we carry conceptions of life of how I'm going to enjoy matter. That's carried in the mind. And so, super soul, situated within the heart, sees the conceptions of life and the desires to enjoy matter within living entity, and then stuff forms. You know, we pursue happiness, and Krishna sanctions the objects that are sources of misery. Adiyatmaka, adibhautika, and adivika. We get a body and a mind. And then there's other living entities that have their program, their desires, and it conflicts with our desires. Misery. And then, you know, the natural disturbances, the demigods, they're doing their program to help us understand this isn't a place of happiness, although you thought it was. And so those very sources of happinesses are source of misery. So knowledge, transcendental knowledge, leads to detachment. Same as the going back to chapter 1 of this canto 6, where transcendental knowledge, according to what Shukadeva Goswami is teaching to Maharaj Parikshit in chapter 1, knowledge will help prevent a living entity from indulging in activities that are of a sinful nature. However, knowledge alone is not enough. And we see it in the world, and if we're a little self-honest, we'll see it in ourselves. Not necessarily sinful activity, but things that are unwholesome and better than we had without them. And we fix our intelligence in knowing what we should do and make a plan to do what we know we should do. And some time passes and we don't do it consistently. We may do it a little bit, but not as much as, you know, the squeaky clean kind of do it always. And that's just on the duty platform, what to speak of the bhakti platform. Or the other way around, something that we shouldn't do, it's detrimental. I shouldn't do this. Whatever it is, shouldn't get angry or shouldn't something. And then, you know, all knowledge and reason and then, you know, at least if there's a tendency, then the tendency is likely to come out again. So knowledge alone is not enough. Same here. Knowledge alone is essential for detachment, but what's the purpose of that detachment? Answer. to then be receptive to the message of bhakti and take full shelter unencumbered by attachment. So we're almost done. Prabhupada makes reference to a couple of verses that Krishna speaks in Bhagavad Gita, and he makes reference to Rishabhdev. And although the version is different, the message is the same. It's Rishabhdev instructing his 100 sons, headed by Bharat. And by the way, within that assembly of 100 sons are the Navayogendras, who later become Uttama Bhagavats. So, anyway, it's instructions that's pertinent for everybody, the attached and the unattached. So just read. It's 5-5, Canto 5, Chapter 5, Rishabhdev's instructions. Very important instructions. Do you remember, Lakshmivani, when the Gurukul started and Yasoda Nandana had all the boys at the Gurukul in Vrindavan stand out in that, you know, veranda area and at the top of their lungs scream these verses? Remember? Yeah. Because, you know, instructions for becoming perfect. It was an interesting exhibition of screaming. Huh? I don't know how much went in. But anyway, here's the verses. It starts with Nunam pramata kurute vikarma yadindriya priteya apranoti na sadhu manye yata atmano yam asanapi kleshada. There's this word klesha again. Asadeha. When a person considers sense gratification the aim of life, he certainly becomes mad after materialistic living and engages in all kinds of sinful activity. He does not know that due to his past misdeeds, he has already received a body which, although temporary, is the cause of his misery. And it goes on in this verse. Same as message here. Same message. The cause of misery, although one is hoping for happiness. So the hope for happiness gives a configuration or conception in the mind, and then the material energy configures itself. Here's a body, here's a mind. Try to enjoy. Oh, but it's miserable. Actually, the living entity should not have taken on a material body, but he has been awarded the material body for sense gratification. Therefore, I think it is not befitting an intelligent man to involve himself again in the activities of sense gratification by which he perpetually gets material bodies one after another. I won't go on. The next two verses are very nice, similar, just continuing the message, and it leads into devotional service. The implication, inextricable implication, material energy is very tricky, very powerful. It's designed by Krishna, so there's no escape. You can't, like, be clever and get out. Okay, well, how do you get out? Well, you take shelter of one who's out. And they help you get out. Otherwise, you can't get out. Like, at the bottom of a well, help! You can't climb out. Someone who's at the top of the well can lower a rope and grab onto the rope. Who are you? What's the rope? Grab the rope. You don't even have to climb. Just grab the rope. Hold on. I'll pull you out. So like that. Instructions are the rope from a person. So that's Angira and what Narada are doing. And then, so just one last thing. Although there's another verse. I can't find the Sanskrit for it. But although the body is temporary, and although the temporary body is the source of misery, at the same time, that's the bad news. The good news is same time, if used properly, it can bring one to the position of freedom. If you take the proper instructions, and you need a proper instructor to give proper instructions, and you need to grab onto the instructions. Just hold on to the instructions. Like, you know, assimilate the instructions and live by the instructions. It's not a mechanical process, it's a devotional process. And it's magical. One enters into the region of transcendence, although you're in the material body. And certainly the material body is going to perish and, you know, have hip problems and knee problems and, you know, things like that. It's going to happen. Those are little lessons, not a source of happiness. It's a source of misery, detachment. Let me use it in a proper way in pursuance of happiness of Krishna somehow. Hare Krishna. Any discussion? Yes.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, thank you for a wonderful class. So this discussion of continuously going after sense gratification and then, you know, punched by Maya,
yeah,
brings to mind of a verse, one verse that I've, you know, not, that my brother will often quote also. It's in like 5:14:10 of the Bhagavatam. The conditioned soul sometimes appreciates the futility of sense enjoyment in the material world, and he sometimes considers sense enjoyment to be full of miseries. However, due to his strong bodily conception, he continues to run after sense gratification as an animal runs after a mirage in a desert. So, in regards to this verse.
Next verse.
It appears.
5:14:10.
10. Yeah. Okay. So it appears that, basically there's many, innumerable verses in the Bhagavatam Gita basically saying it's practically impossible to control our senses. But when we read the sastras, it appears that controlling the senses and mind is kind of directly connected with not only avoiding Vaishnava Apara, but always carrying the glories of devotees within our heart. Just like the sage, I forget his name, it begins with the S, who meditated for 10,000 years. And he offended Garuda. You know, he was meditating for 10,000 years and criticized Garuda Shobari. So he criticized Garuda, and then, you know, he became attracted to fish even after, you know, engaging in, you know, intercourse. And so also like Durvasa Muni, I'm not too familiar with that in Ambarish. So it appears that there's so many stories throughout the sastras. Yeah, innumerable, that it's like practically impossible to control the senses, but controlling the senses, when we attain some sort of, I wouldn't say nishtha, but some type of consistent and devotional life, is directly connected with not only avoiding Vaishnava Parad,
yeah,
but always carrying the glories of devotees within our hearts. So
yeah.
Would that be a correct understanding?
Correct understanding. Kijai. Along with the transcendental conception, kind of hitting the eject button of the bodily conception, the conception, spiritual conception, sustained in part by spiritual humility, not spiritual, yay, I'm successful, look at me. But spiritual humility, that means staying in that conception that I'm a very tiny living entity dependent upon descending mercy of Krishna, which comes through his devotees. And not, you know, occasionally or theoretically, or say it in class and then behavior is something else, but, you know, factually. Depending on descending mercy. That's protection. Something else.
Another point. Yeah, it actually involves you. A story someone told me about the John. Actually, you said the tendency of, if anger is there, then, you know, you can't put on the show. We can act all,
yeah,
you know, tranquil all we want, but as soon as some circumstances. So Bhakti John actually told me, you know, some years ago when you were in Houston. When you were in Houston. you were given a seminar outside, and then you guys had a book table of, you know, Krishna books, you know, next to you. And then a few Christians came over, and one started to, you know, blast you guys. And then he knocked over the book table.
Sounds familiar. But then Shavan Dhanakali probably had lots of experience with that, as have I.
And so then the other Christians chastised their friend.
Exactly.
And then they picked up the book table and put the books back on the table and kind of, you know, chastised
him. The exact same thing happened several times. Exact same thing.
Would you like to briefly explain that scenario?
Which one?
The one I'm talking about.
Well, the scenario is, you know, somebody that's, you know, somebody that has a material conception of spirituality, or you know, a fanatical knowledge without a heart that's pure, or a heart that's has some faith in God but isn't guided by knowledge, both are problematic and in fact dangerous. So, like, you know, there's fanatics in the world, right? Religious fanatics in the world. It's not new. It's all over the place. And it's not just, you know, at a book table. It's between one nation and another nation. Or one group of, you know, anyway, one group and another group. I heard Pragosh Prabhu from Ireland describe, you know, the decades of bitter violence in Ireland between, you know, the Protestants and the Catholics. And Christians have duking it out, killing each other, and etc. You know, modern times, it's other groups of people. So it's not just, you know, Christian and Krishna. It's, you know, this one and that one. But, you know, the very, very poor material conception superimposed on something that originally is pure. It becomes adulterated over time by persons that are carrying a material conception and superimposing the material conception on the spiritual pure, and the spiritual pure gets lost and it becomes something else. And then it becomes, you know, groupism and friends and enemies and all of that. The fault is not in religion. The fault is material conception. And there's, you know, whether it's this type or that type, it's material conception. Yes. Back to Luke.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, thank you. Thank you for the class. This scenario we have with Narada and Angira Muni's instructing King Chitraketu, mm-hmm. You're explaining how it's because of Maharaj Chitraketu's attachment that he wasn't able to
previously receive transcendental knowledge.
Yeah. So then Krishna had to arrange a situation where he experienced a lot of suffering. And that was what allowed him to realize some...
Or to be able to hear.
Yeah.
Just to open his... pull the beans out of his ears and start to hear.
Yeah. And be open to some alternative engagement from what he was currently...
Yes.
Yeah.
Good.
So... what is it that allows one to gracefully transition from one engagement to another without requiring Krishna to make some situation that really causes
Very
a lot
good.
Of distress?
Oh, it's simple. Just, you know, there's different kinds of intelligence. One who is simply by hearing, that's first class intelligence. Second class, one hears but doesn't understand but sees, then they can understand. Then the third is, they hear, they see, they still don't understand, they suffer, and then they can understand. Then there's others that go through all those and they still don't understand. That's the fourth class intelligence. So, it's Now, either the first class or second class is a substitute for the third. And, you know, we don't like to suffer. Universally, we don't like to suffer. But we're a test. And so when Krishna is very kind, he helps us get over that attachment through some calamity. These, you know, the calamity itself doesn't get you over the attachment. The calamity itself provides one the opportunity to be able to hear beyond the attachment. So it's, you know, when calamity comes, fantastic. This is a great opportunity to hear. Let me go to those sources where I can hear from with faith, and they're going to give transcendental knowledge, not the other kind. Oh, it's okay. You know, like Jarasandha was, his minister said, it's okay. You're a great hero. You can just get another army and go back and fight Krishna. It was just one of those things. Yeah, I'm a great hero. I'll do it better next time. Anyway, one should be very careful who one hears from in those circumstances. And always, but you know, especially in those circumstances. Don't take shelter of someone who's just going to coddle you and pat you on the head, but someone that will, you know, like Jai Jagannath, you know, someone that will like get a hammer and let you have it. Like that.
So when we notice others have perhaps less than first class intelligence.
Yeah.
They're kind of persistently pursuing certain types of engagement.
Yeah.
And suffering.
Yeah.
And that's very clear.
Yes.
And it's painful to observe.
Yes.
What are some appropriate ways to...
It depends on the circumstance. Very quickly. It depends on the circumstance. You know, Narada is expert. We're not. So study how Narada assesses situations. How did he respond to King Prachinibari? How did he respond to Nalakovera Manigriva? How did he respond to this one, that one? And just like, you know, he's not a cookie cutter bhakta. He's very versatile. So we should also, like, you know, and you open your heart to Krishna, please guide me. Let me think of different scriptural examples or other transcendental Prabhupada examples of how Prabhupada dealt with things. And then at least, you know, the range of options opens. Let me think creatively and seek Krishna's inspiration from those transcendental sources. That alone is like a major step. Rather than, okay, here I come, I'm going to rescue this person. Someone else had their hand up. Jitendra's got his hand up. He's got two hands up.
I was just thinking, whatever we do here is for mitigation of distress.
Yeah.
We're out in the cold, we want to get into a warm place. And then we think that's happiness. We're hungry and we get some food. We think that's happiness. But it's really mitigation of distress. But we have to mitigate the distress enough so we can perform our devotional service.
Yeah. But make sure you do the first one for the higher purpose, not just the mitigation or distress part.
Right. Some people eat to live. Some live to eat.
Jitendra's notes. He's reading from his notes.
About the car thing.
The car thing.
About the car thing, you know.
Yeah.
I remember, I think it was Prabhupada, he says, somebody gets hit in their car and he says, the person says, you hit me. And he says, no, I hit your car. You know.
That's exactly what he's saying.
The car and
the
living entity are two different
things. Identify with the covering.
Yeah.
The body.
And then we have this Maya Sukaya, which, you know, like the automobile industry has created, fighting over oil, traffic jams, pollution, building roads. But the Amish had a simple idea, you know, and they're looked at as kind of strange. The Amish?
Yeah, yeah, I just like looking at you like, you know, how come you're not out there with the Amish?
It's not allowed in Chicago. You can't have a horse and buggy.
Well, there's ways to get to where there's not in Chicago.
You want me to leave and go with the Amish community? And
maybe you should sign up with dietist program and back to nature, right?
And then Lynn Prabhupada says the dog runs on four legs, but you run on four wheels. He gives that example. And then the example of the Rolls Royce.
Rolls Royce.
Somebody wants to give you a Rolls Royce, but they tell you, you know, someday it will blow up. So, you know, where are you going to go with that?
That's the Jack in the Box.
Yeah. Now my Jack in the Box, you would turn the wheel and this pleasant music would come.
Pleasant music.
But then you wouldn't know when the music was going to stop and when the Jack in the Box was going to come out. So that was kind of like, you know, the downside of the Jack in the Box.
Pleasure then followed by misery.
Pardon me?
The pleasant music then followed by he'd come out and go,
freaks you out.
Okay. Jitendriya, that's enough.
Well, you used to say, where are you going with this? But I guess that's your way of saying it. Should I read you an offering, in December, Maharaj? Or you want me to just, you know, pay my basics?
Save it for tomorrow.
Okay.
Save it for tomorrow. Anyone else? Dunakel, you always have something nice. Nothing today. Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.